But I'm sitting there. I laughed under my breath. Michael knew the rules. When he drove, which was almost always, Kai rode shotgun. When I drove, Damon and I were the ones in charge. After twiddling his thumbs for a moment, Michael finally gave in. He hopped out of the truck, both of them trying to stare each other down like it was a pissing contest.
I was almost hoping you'd put up more of a fight, Damon taunted.
Michael teased back.
Make you hard, do I?
Damon smiled and climbed in, while Michael circled the truck and got in behind me. What took you so long? I griped, shifting the truck into gear. What the hell do you do in there so long?
He's in there every Wednesday night, Kai pointed out. They got some meeting of the over-18 female chastity club or something?
Come on, Damon whined. That's way too easy for me. They don't have to be 18.
Or female, Kai added.
I snorted as Damon whipped around and threw a playful punch at Kai.
Bastard.
Kai just laughed, trying to shield himself. I shook my head, pulling away from the curb and steering back onto the street. But then Damon shouted at me.
Wait, wait, stop!
I slammed on my brakes, seeing Griffin Ashby, the town's mayor, dart in front of my truck. Shit. That was close. He looked over at us, dressed in his gray suit and yellow shirt and tie, narrowing his eyes on Damon as he crossed the street. Damon stared back, but when Ashby's gaze twisted into a scowl, Damon stuck up his middle finger, taunting him. Ashby looked away, stepping up onto the sidewalk and disappearing into the White Crow Tavern. I hit the gas, taking off down the street.
What is it with you and him?
Damon sighed, taking a cigarette out of his pack and sticking it between his lips.
I ruined his daughter.
Arian? Michael asked. Thought you said she had the brain power of a Pringle.
Not that one, Damon mumbled, lighting his cigarette.
Ashby's other daughter had to be only 14 or so. I'd never seen her and Damon together. But his gaze was turned out the open window now as he smoked, and if I knew anything about Damon, it was that if he was vague, it was on purpose. Heading up into the hills, I drove down the darkened highway, the sun having set an hour ago and the sky nearly black now. Kai flipped a page in his booklet.
What is that? I asked.
Course catalog.
He flipped another page, harder this time.
A fucking course catalog. Come to Westgate with me, Michael said.
Or UPenn with me, Damon added.
I smiled.
Or Fiji with me.
You're coming to UPenn with me, Damon told me. Fat chance. I flicked the ashes out the window and took another drag. College was months away, but decisions needed to be made soon. If I weren't a Grayson, I'd never be able to get into Princeton. But the fix was in, and I was off to Jersey next summer, whether I liked it or not. I couldn't think of anywhere I wanted to be less, but I also couldn't think of anywhere better to be. That was my problem. As my dad said,
until you can make a decision, we'll make it for you.
Apparently, a beach bum in the Polynesian Islands wasn't a lofty enough goal. Kai tossed the catalog down on the seat next to him.
My father wants me on my own. He thinks we all need space.
From all of us, or just Will and me?
Damon asked, humor lacing his tone. Yeah, Katsumori didn't think much of us. Damon was trouble, and I was... nothing. At least Michael was ambitious. He was a leader, and Kai's father respected that as a valuable influence for his son. But Kai just joked back.
Don't be like that, he cooed to Damon. He was really flattered you approved of his taste in women when you adjusted yourself right in front of him at the sight of my mother.
In a bathing suit, Kai,
Damon pointed out, looking at Kai over his shoulder.
I mean, what the fuck? Jesus!
I shook with a laugh, remembering that day last summer we were all at Kai's house.
And you all think I don't have any shame, Damon said. If she weren't your mom,
my father would still rip your dick up through your stomach and out your mouth, Kai retorted. Damon quieted, settling back into his seat and sticking his cigarette into his mouth.
Daddy's boy.
Kai shook his head, but I saw the smile fade as he looked out the window.
Maybe we'll stay in the area and go to Trinity instead, Michael said, so we can all be close to Kai's mom.
I snorted, all of us laughing as Kai rolled his eyes. I took a puff off the cigarette, realization starting to dawn. It was months away, but it was coming. Different schools, different states, new people. And that's what scared me the most. People change us. Others become important, while others become less, and soon we'd be gone. She'd be gone. I turned my eyes out my window, the inevitable sitting on my shoulders like a house.
Okay, Devil's Night, Michael cleared his throat. Probably the catacombs, but keep the cemetery in mind, he told us. I'm thinking about changing it up this year. There are some tombs and that bell tower through the woods. What are you guys thinking for your pranks?
I couldn't think of anything yet. Nothing good, anyway.
I'm kind of thinking about getting out of town, Kai answered. Meridian City. The Whitehall District, maybe. Or the Opera House? Maybe book a floor at a hotel?
The whole point is to be here with our people, Damon told him, on our turf.
Kai was silent, and I saw him open up his course catalog again, mumbling.
Just an idea.
I watched the both of them, kind of enjoying how they hardly ever got along. Kai was ready for tomorrow. Damon never wanted to leave today. I had no idea where the hell I was half the time, let alone where I wanted to be. An idea occurred to me, though.
The Cove, I said. After hours.
Damon nodded.
That might be an idea.
I looked over at him. I heard a rumor the place might not be open much longer.
Even better.
Too much of a liability, Michael interjected. Drunk people get stupid, and stupid people on roller coasters will piss me off.
Come on, it would be fun. Just us and a few others, invitation only. But as usual, my ideas were tabled.
I'll think of something, Kai told him. Something that lets us end the night in one piece, and between the sheets with something pretty.
Hell yeah. Damon replied. That's all you had to say.
I shook my head, remembering what our real priorities were. I rounded the bend, climbing toward the cemetery, but just then, blue and red lights flashed in my rearview mirror, and I spotted headlights charging me from behind.
Ugh, fuck! I growled. That son of a bitch!
Damn it. Pressing the brakes harder than necessary, I jerked my truck over to the shoulder and halted, hearing the gravel kick up underneath.
Well,
Kai started.
I'll hold my tongue, I assured him, already knowing what he was going to say.
I pulled the weed out of the center console and slipped it to Damon.
Get rid of this.
Dude, what the hell?
Kai barked, but I ignored him.
Get rid of it now, I told Damon again, turning off the engine. And don't toss it out the window. His dash cam.
God damn it, he grumbled, stuffing it into the glove compartment and slamming it closed.
Lock it. I threw him the keys.
You think he knows?
Damon looked at me as he quickly locked my glove box. I peered into my side mirror, seeing Officer Scott walk up to my side with his flashlight beaming.
I think M is smarter than that, I said.
She wouldn't complain about last night and the lock-in. Tattling would dent her pride. Not sure how I knew that about her, but I did.
Think he knows what? Michael pressed. What did you guys do? Damn it, you're always pulling shit when I'm not looking.
We didn't hurt her, Damon assured.
Just made her pee her pants a little, Kai added.
I bit back my smile, just as Scott tapped on my glass. I rolled down my window and flicked the butt of my cigarette out onto the highway, missing him by just a hair. He stopped, turning his eyes toward the cigarette burning its last embers, and back to me, flashing his light inside.
Here to see that picture of me again? I teased.
but he wasn't laughing.
License and registration, please.
I hesitated a moment for good measure, and then reached into the console, pulling out my registration and insurance card holder, and then my license out of my wallet. I handed him both.
I promise you, they haven't changed since last week, Scott.
He didn't seem to hear me as he flashed his light on my license like he hadn't seen it a dozen times in the past 3 months, and then my registration and insurance, as if he didn't already know that they don't expire until my next birthday.
You know how fast you were going? He asked, studying my insurance card.
It wasn't fast.
Have you been drinking? He inquired, unfazed.
No. He paused, still looking over my material.
You on drugs?
Sometimes, I replied. Damon snorted, and Michael cleared his throat to cover up his laugh. Scott straightened and took a step back, looking down on me.
Step out. I want to look around the truck.
And I couldn't stop myself.
Well, my glove compartment is locked, so is the trunk in the back, and I know my rights, so you gon' need a warrant for that, I sang.
Everyone started laughing, Damon shaking next to me, and Kai hunching over in my rearview mirror, his head in his hands to cover it up. I always loved that Jay-Z song. At least I was good for a few laughs. Officer Scott looked down at me, chewing the inside of his lip like he'd just love to have a reason. This was the kind of guy who would discharge his weapon on someone, claiming the cell phone in their hand looked like a gun. The laughter calmed down, and I turned my eyes on him again.
I'm sorry, I told him. I'm an idiot.
I bid him to come closer, softening my voice. I know how you see me, I said. Ignorant, arrogant, frivolous. I want to be good, honestly. Goal-oriented, a hard worker, honest, righteous. I paused. Like Emery, your sister, right? He narrowed his eyes on me, and I could see his shoulders tense. You know, I continued, it's amazing that given the years your family has been in Thunder Bay, I don't know her as well as I'd like.
I turned to my friends. You hear that, guys? A girl I don't know.
Some laughter went off inside the truck. I turned back to him, seeing the threat start to register. We were starting to understand each other. All the hours we walked the halls together at school, I taunted. All the hours on that bus to away games and back. All the late nights at basketball practice and her at band practice.
Plenty of time to get to know someone, Kai added. Turner didn't even need 5 minutes to get Evie Lynn pregnant.
Some of us have better longevity, I joked over my shoulder.
We know you do. Michael patted my shoulder.
Hell yes, I do.
I turned my gaze back on Scott, seeing the corners of his eyes start to crinkle in a glare. I hooded my own.
I promise you, I growled low. However much you don't like me, there is still so much more to come if you don't.
I pulled my license and card holder out of his hand, whispering,
Stop pulling me over.
I was normally a happy boy, but his hard-on for me was fucking with my patience. He didn't pull over Michael, Damon, or Kai constantly. He messed with me because he assumed I didn't have a brain. They thought that because I liked being nice, that I didn't know how to be mean. And believe me, I was capable. Snatching my keys from Damon's hand, I started the truck, cast Scott one last look, and took off, pulling back onto the road and cranking up the music as the wind blew through the cab.
Be careful, Michael said after a minute. That was entertaining and all, but men like him are short-sighted. I don't think he's going to have the sense to stop. Watch for his next move.
Fuck him, I fisted the steering wheel. What the hell's he going to do to me? No one said anything more as we pulled up the drive and through the open gates of the cemetery. My interest in Emery Scott had nothing to do with her brother, sadly. I wish it were that easy. But I wasn't averse to killing two birds with one stone, either. How much would he lose his mind if he couldn't find her one night, and then found her with me? The thought made me smile. Winding around the avenues, I spotted cars ahead and flashlights and headed toward them, pulling up behind Bryce's black Camaro. We hopped out of the truck, Michael and Kai grabbing a cooler out of the back, and all of us walking over the grass, past trees and hedges, and up to the rest of the team already gathered around the grave. "Hey, man," I greeted Simon and tipped my chin at the others. More haze went off around the circle, and Michael and Kai set down the cooler, some of the team immediately digging in for a beer. I looked down. What the hell? Marker flags were stuck in the ground, lining the grass-covered gravesite, making a rectangle the width and length of a casket. "They're digging him up," Bryce said, cracking a beer. "They're actually doing it." I glanced over my shoulder, frowning at the newly finished, brand-new piece of shit McClanahan tomb, complete with the arrogant columns and pompous stained glass windows.
"He wouldn't want this," Damon said.
I looked back down at Edward McClanahan's grave, the old marble headstone green with age, rain, and snow, the years of his life barely visible anymore. But we knew his age. 1936 to 1954. 18. Young, just like us. He'd be 18 forever. His surviving relatives wanted his legend to die, and the notoriety of the family name with it, so they built themselves a tomb, thinking they were going to hide him behind stone walls and a gate. "They're not moving him anywhere," I said. Michael caught my eye, a knowing smile curling his lips. Pulling the cell phone out of my pocket, I turned it on and started recording, documenting our annual pilgrimage to McClanahan's grave every year since freshman year. Damon threw me a beer, and the rest of us cracked ours open. "To McClanahan!" Michael called out. "McClanahan!" Everyone joined in, raising our cans in the air. "The first horseman," Damon chimed in. "Give us the season," another said. Michael, our team's captain, looked around. "Offerings?" he teased. Jeremy Owens reached behind him on the ground and whipped out a pink tulle dress with a cheap silky bodice. It looked like a ballet costume. "Close enough." He tossed a replica of McClanahan's girlfriend's homecoming dress on the grave. Simon took a swig of his beer. "All I want to know is what that bitch looked like splattered all over the rocks."
"We'll never know," Michael told him. "Only that when push came to shove, he did what he had to do. He sacrificed for the good of the team, for the family. When it comes down to it, would any of us do the same? He was a king."
Not was a fucking king. Is a fucking king, because to us, he was a living, breathing part of this town.
"Give us the season," Kai chanted, raising his beer.
"Remind us what's necessary," someone added.
And then everyone chimed in.
"For the team, for the family."
I moved the camera around the circle, taking everyone in.
"Give us the season," they called out. "Give us the season."
And again, and again. Some poured a beer onto the grave, and all over her dress, the candles spread out in devotion, flickering in the light breeze. We didn't explain this to anyone, ever. It was kind of like the people who didn't really believe in God but still went to church. There was something to be said for tradition, ritual. It was good for the team. The basketball team had been coming here for decades at the beginning of every season. We would never not come. An hour later, a small bonfire burned inside the ruins of St. Killian's, the keg already half empty, and laughter and shouting coming from down in the catacombs. Damon sat in some dilapidated lawn chair, staring at the flames as two girls talked and kept an eye on him from near the sanctuary, waiting.
I wish he'd gotten to grow up, I said, tossing a stick into the fire. I wonder what he'd be like now.
McClanahan? Damon asked.
Yeah.
He waited, the flames glowing in his eyes.
He wouldn't be special if he didn't die.
He was special before that. He was a captain, like Michael. He was a leader, selfless, a fighter.
No one really knew what happened that night.
He wouldn't be special, Damon repeated. Everyone changes. We all grow up.
Not me.
He breathed out a laugh.
You're going to have to be someone someday.
I'm going to be Indiana Jones.
He just smiled, but kept his eyes on the fire. He never tried to drag me into reality as hard as Michael and Kai did. I had no clue what I wanted or who I wanted to be. I just wanted my people, and I wanted the girl of my dreams.
The girls giggled again, and Damon's eyes flashed up, seeing them.
Are you coming? He sighed.
I followed his gaze, eyeing the legs and hair and how easy it would be to have some fun and get off. But
I don't know, I told him.
You ever think of doing this shit in the comfort of your bed? I was tired of playing in the catacombs, but Damon didn't like to play alone. He needed me. I liked someone needing me.
Why does no one ever get to go into your room? I asked. Not me, not Michael, not Kai. Definitely no girls. Can't we all go somewhere comfortable?
You want to see my bed? Damon teased. I'd like to make sure it's not a coffin.
He snorted, but still, he didn't answer the question. What was he hiding in there anyway?
I looked up at the girls again, but my gaze went right through them like they weren't even there. I didn't want that tonight. I didn't want to play here. I'd rather relive last night, even though all that girl and I did was fight.
I smiled to myself. She'd fallen asleep with her glasses on last night. I took them off. I loved the way her tie was always tightened half-assed, her cuffs were too long and never buttoned, and her skin was my fucking religion lately, especially the skin on her neck. I hated school, but I was dying for Monday. She was gone when I woke up this morning, and I wanted to see her look at me after last night.
Would anything have changed? Would the sharpness in her eyes have softened at all?
You're not good enough for her, Damon said, breaking the silence.
I stared at him. How did he know what I was thinking?
You'll never be good enough for her, he pointed out. Best you hear it now.
A friend would help me get what I wanted, I told him. He fell silent, and I studied him.
You don't want me to have what I want, though, I said. You don't want Michael or Kai to have what they want.
I shouldn't have everything I want either, he argued. Getting what you want risks losing what you already have, and nothing can come between us.
He looked up, meeting my eyes.
Nothing will be as perfect as this. I don't like change.
He turned away again, gazing into the fire.
Michael is always in so much control, he continued, his voice growing harder. I'd love to show him what he really needs. I'd love to see Kai troubled and confused, really fucking unhinged, so nothing I have can ever escape me. They act like they don't need us. I wish they knew that they did.
I knew what Damon did to sink his teeth into those around him.
You want to fuck me too? I said in a low voice, a soft smile tilting the corner of my mouth. He grinned, still not looking at me. But surprisingly, he replied,
Sometimes.
I stilled.
Sometimes I think about her watching us, he went on. I think she'd like it, but she'd hate that she liked it.
With Damon, he didn't see the person. He was attracted to control, making people do things they wouldn't normally do. It was all about the turn of the screw,
Like a fishhook, he burrowed his way into heads and stayed there long after he'd gone. And his friends were the most valuable thing to him. He'd die for us, but the scary part was that might not be the worst that could happen.
"She'll never be to you what we are," he told me, "because she's too scared, too proud, and too boring."
He stopped and finally turned to me.
"She'd never love you like you deserve because she doesn't respect you. You're too shallow to her."
And I felt my insides fold in on themselves, over and over, creating this hole in my gut, because I knew he was right, and fuck him. What would she see in me? And why the hell did I care? I was William Grayson III, the grandson of a senator, the best shooter on our basketball team, and she'll be coming to my company in 10 years, begging for a grant to fund her stupid theory on the viability of rooftop farms with their own microclimates or some such shit. I didn't need her. I dug my keys out of my pocket, not caring where Kai and Michael had disappeared to. Everyone would find their way home. I turned around. "I gotta go."
"Will."
But I didn't stop. Heading outside, I jumped into my truck and sped out of there, charging back onto the highway, and I didn't care if that asshole pulled me over again. I rubbed my hand over my face, shaking my head as that whole conversation replayed in my mind. Emery Scott hated me, but she hated nearly everyone. So she was making me work for it. So what? I'd be disappointed if she didn't. She didn't respect Michael, Kai, or Damon either. It shouldn't hurt. But it did. I always liked her. I always looked for her. And over the years, passing her in the halls and feeling her in the classroom next to me, she got hot as fuck in ways no one else seemed to notice but me. God, she had a mouth on her. I loved her attitude and her anger because I was always too warm and I needed the ice. It made me smile. But I also saw things no one else did. The cute way she'd trip over a sidewalk slab or walk straight into a mailbox because her eyes were lost in the trees over her head instead of watching where she was going. How she'd push her grandmother in her wheelchair down to the village, both of them smiling and eating ice cream together. Emmy would hold her hand the whole time they sat. The way she worked so hard, all by herself, without anyone to keep her company on her creative projects around town. There was so much there that people didn't see. She shouldn't be alone all the time. But Damon was right. She'd never be on my arm. She'd never let her guard down. I turned, going past her street, and straight to the village, stopping at the gazebo she had started building before the school year started. Some project she'd convinced the city to let her build in the park at the center of the square. She seemed to be here working if she wasn't at school or band practice. I stopped along the curb outside of Styx, looking up into the park and the beams rising up toward the sky, but no roof yet. She wasn't there. It was Saturday. She'd probably been there all day, but I'd missed it. Pulling back onto the street, I drove past the cathedral, about to head home, but just then, I saw her. She pulled the hood of her hoodie over her head, her long brown hair spilling out as she gripped the bag over her chest. I kept driving, but kept glancing behind me, watching her. Her glasses made her eyes hard to see, but she had them buried in her phone anyway. Damon was in there 2 hours ago. Was she? How long had she been in there tonight? I thought she was Jewish. If not, I was going to feel stupid for the Yom Kippur gift I left in her locker. I continued driving, watching her disappear in my rearview mirror, and I wanted to go back and find her, but I knew she wouldn't take a ride from me. She wouldn't take anything from me. I was nothing, and she knew it, and in 10 years, she'd be amazing, and I'd be nothing. She would never need me. Within minutes, I was descending the steps of the catacombs, hearing whispers below, and knowing which room Damon liked best. I leaned on the doorframe,
seeing him toss his shirt onto the floor before lifting his mouth off the girl he had laid on the table. His eyes met mine, the other chick still in her clothes and straddling a stool in the corner. Damon smiled, standing up straight.
Get your ass in here.
Chapter 7. Emery. Present. I popped my head up, my eyelids heavy with sleep and my head pounding. White filled my gaze as I jerked my head left and right, realization settling in. It wasn't a dream. I was at Black Church. Checking the door across the room, I saw it closed and the chair still fixed underneath the knob. I exhaled, pushing myself up from where I'd crouched in the corner to keep all angles in view. I hadn't meant to fall asleep. I looked around 4 o'clock, but there was nothing. How long had I slept? I rubbed my eyes, pulling open a curtain and seeing that it was still dark outside. The forest laid beyond the tree line, the great expanse nearly pitch black under the cloud-covered moon. Would I still be alive if I were out there now? Releasing the curtain, I eyed the two-way mirror to my right, wondering if they were watching me. Did all the rooms have those? And why? The floor above me creaked, and I shot my eyes up to the ceiling, the floorboards whining with someone's weight. Where the hell were we? Think. Think. The foliage outside, the trees, the moss on the rocks, and the air, heavy with moisture. Maybe Canada? And we couldn't be as secluded as they thought. Checking out the fancy woodwork, ornate doors and fixtures, and the chandeliers I'd noticed in the house, I knew one thing for certain. Black Church wasn't always a prison. It wasn't functional as one. Someone built it as a home, and a home this size was built for more than a family. It was built for entertaining. A place this size didn't run without support from a local population. Servants, craftsmen, farmers. My stomach ached with hunger as I looked at the pasta Aydin Kadir had left me on the bench at the bottom of his bed. The sauce had settled, and the noodles had yellowed, less opaque, but my mouth still watered looking at it. I'd refused to eat on the chance it was drugged, which was an entirely reasonable concern, since I must have been drugged when I was first brought here. But I'd also slept without incident, so they clearly weren't waiting for me to be less on guard to attack. This was his room, he'd said. He would have come back here to sleep if it was that time of night. Where was he? Leaving the food behind, I twisted around, looking for the knife, and I grabbed it off the floor where I'd dropped it when I was sleeping. Taking it, I dashed into the bathroom, filled a glass of water, and downed a cup before wiping off my mouth and heading past his treadmill for the door. I only hesitated a moment before pulling the chair away and slowly twisting. The pulse in my neck pumped hard, even though I knew I wasn't in any more danger outside this room than in. If they had wanted to get in, they would have. I only put the chair up to give myself a warning before they broke through. But I needed food not made by someone else, and I needed a better look at my surroundings. Peering into the hall, I glanced left and right, half expecting to see a guard posted at my door. But the night outside the windows around the foyer darkened the floors and walls, the beautiful glow of the glass chandelier the only thing lighting the empty second floor. There was no one. That was weird. Were they that confident I wouldn't try to run again? I looked right, scanning the wall and seeing the crack in the paneling. Doing one more sweep to make sure I was alone, I stepped out into the hall and dug my nails into the crack, trying to pry the panel away. I knew it opened. Maybe someone hadn't been watching me in that mirror, but I knew the room was here, damn it. After it didn't give, I planted both hands on the panel and pushed instead, hearing the spring snap and watching as the door immediately opened. My heart skipped a beat, and I almost smiled. I swung the door wide and looked inside the small room, seeing a chair sitting on a concrete floor, surrounded by concrete walls. I stepped inside and walked to the glass, turning to look into Aydin's room, the view spanning the entire width. I shook my head. Unbelievable. Was Will here hours ago? Watching me? Was someone else? So many questions. But mostly, were there more secret rooms, and were they here when Black Church was someone's home? Or were they installed when it became a prison? Because if so, that meant there was indeed some kind of surveillance. Someone might be checking up on them more than just every 30 days. If there were hidden chambers, then there were hidden ways for people to get in and out. I backed out of the room and closed the door, scanning the landing again. The shadows of the leaves on the trees outside danced across the railing that loomed over the foyer, and the water falling outside surrounded the house like a metronome, steady and constant. Inhaling, the scent of old books and burning wood hit my nose, and I clutched the knife tightly at my side as I descended the staircase. I wanted to go everywhere, see every room, inspect every closet, and get the lay of the land, but I had no idea what time it was, or which rooms would be occupied at this hour. Stepping off the staircase, I walked through the foyer, passing a dark and empty drawing room, as well as a dining room on my right, and a ballroom and library to my left. Candles flickered on antique silver candelabras that stood as tall as me around the foyer, and I stopped at one, staring at it for a moment. The place had electricity. Why the ambiance? I picked up the matchbox on the nearby table and stole a couple of matches out of it, sticking them into my pocket. Lightly stepping through the house, I sneaked right, toward the kitchen, but a cry echoed down the hall from my left. I stopped and looked, the hair on my arms rising as I heard a grunt.
"Just leave it, Will,"
someone growled. I narrowed my eyes, inching toward the voice, even though I should just run. I passed a sitting room and an office and kept walking down the hall, seeing movement on my left. I turned and looked into a home gym, much like the wrestling room back in my old high school. A wide-open area mat surrounded by equipment, treadmills, ellipticals, free weights. Taylor Dinescu did push-ups on the mat, his eyes darting up and locking with mine. His sweaty brown hair stuck to his scalp as his naked chest and back glistened. My stomach dipped at the look in his eyes as his push-ups got faster and faster, and he continued to stare at me like I was something on his plate. My heart beat in my throat, and I turned away, hearing a grunt from farther down the hall.
"God damn it!"
And then there was a crash. I jumped, fisting the handle of the knife. What the hell? Following the noise, I stopped near a cracked door and peered inside.
"Just leave it,"
Micah growled, falling into a dark wooden secretary, the books on the shelves tumbling out behind him. Tears wet his cheeks, but fire blazed in his eyes as he pushed Will away. I inched closer. Blood was dripping out of Micah's nose. He was dressed in black pants while Will wore jeans, both shirtless, their forms lit only by the glow of a small lamp. Will grabbed the back of Micah's neck and brought him in, forehead to forehead, as Micah shook. My heart ached a little, despite itself. What was wrong with him? Will stared at him as their deep breaths fell in sync, harder and louder, like they were getting ready for something. And then Will took hold of Micah's arm, grabbed the side of his neck with his other hand, and shoved hard, a low, hollow pop sounding as Micah cried out.
"Ah!"
I winced.
"Motherfucker!"
he shouted, as his shoulder was snapped back into its socket, choking on the pain and shoving the secretary over until it crashed onto the floor. Jesus, how the hell did that happen? Sweat coated Micah's black hair, which hung over his eyes, ears, and down his neck, and he leaned into the wall, gasping for breath as the color drained from his face. I wasn't sure how old he was, but right now he looked 12 and helpless. Will handed him a bowl of something with an eating utensil, but Micah pushed it away.
"I'm gonna be sick."
And at that moment, he grabbed the copper wastebasket and leaned over, spilling whatever was in his stomach. I looked away for a moment, but then I heard more growls and grunts coming from farther down the hall and looked toward it, but couldn't see anything. Micah wiped off his mouth and set the tin down as Will set the bowl on the little table.
"Eat it when you're ready," he told him. "I can't take your food."
Will picked up an elastic bandage and started unraveling it, probably meaning to wrap up Micah's arm. But Micah pushed that away, too.
"Don't," he said. "I don't want him to see."
Who? And see what? That he was hurt? Just then, Micah looked up and met my gaze, finally seeing me hiding behind the door. I straightened as Will followed his gaze, noticing me, too. Walking over, he kicked the door, slamming it in my face, and I blinked,
Startling. Prick. Ruckus sounded from somewhere down the hall, and then a growl, and I looked toward the kitchen and back again, gauging my choices as my knee bobbed. I should get back to the kitchen. No one was paying attention, and for all Iden knew right now, I was sleeping. I could grab some provisions and be 2 miles downriver before he realized. But another cry pierced the air, and my curiosity got the better of me. Continuing down the hall, I followed the sounds and rounded a corner, seeing white and blue ahead, as well as steam rising into the air through the open door down the hall. Hiding behind the frame, I peered inside, taken aback by the sight of an indoor pool. And heated, judging by the steam rolling off the surface. I scoffed. Rich boys. 2 men rolled around on the mat laid out on the white-tiled pool deck, and I inched in, hearing Iden talk to Rory as he pinned him to the mat. "Ask for it," he taunted him. "He can have it. All you have to do is ask." Rory Gearden shot up, grabbing Iden by the neck and trying to throw him over. But Iden flipped him over, his naked chest on Rory's bare back as he whispered something in his ear. Rory bared his teeth, pain in his blue eyes at whatever Iden was saying. And deja vu hit me, remembering a similar wrestling match I'd seen with Will. Wood creaked next to me, and I tore my eyes away from the match and looked at the wall, feeling a vibration behind it on my shoulder. It sounded like the movement I heard upstairs. I stood up straight, ready to lean in and listen some more, but then I saw shadows fall behind me and turned my eyes to see Taylor, followed by Will and Micah, heading for the pool. They stalked past me, each one throwing a look before stepping inside the room. I hung back, watching as Rory growled under Iden's attack.
"All the pleasure you got from their pain," Iden told him. "You knew it was going to cost something someday, didn't you?"
He bit his ear, pulling it as every muscle on Rory's body tensed. Iden released it.
"But no," the Alpha continued. "You only dish it when you're sure you can win. On girls who couldn't even tell you were coming for them. You knew that wasn't going to last forever, right?"
What was he talking about? Was that why Rory was here? Taylor smiled, clearly enjoying the scene. Micah stood at the edge of the mat, looking helpless as he stared down red-eyed. Girls who couldn't even tell you were coming. What did that mean?
Say it, socio.
Iden leaned into his ear again.
I'm so fucked up.
Rory resisted, trying to turn away, find a way out, but the cut on his brow dripped blood into his eye, and he just remained silent.
I'm, Iden recited, egging him on, so fucked up.
And then he dropped his voice to a hard whisper we all could hear.
In the head.
A sob escaped Rory, and he squeezed his eyes shut like he was afraid it was true. I looked over at Will, his gaze locked on the scene playing out. But he must have sensed me watching, because he looked over at me, his expression unwavering, but his eyes hard. Why aren't they helping him? The only person who seemed to be enjoying the show was Taylor. Was this how Micah got injured, fighting Iden?
They're never going to let you out, Iden told the man under him. I'm your family now.
Rory gasped, not looking happy about it, and Iden shot off him, standing up and walking to the small table at the edge of the pool. Taking a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue, he poured himself a glass of scotch and threw it back, everyone watching him. I thought Taylor said they didn't have liquor here. Will walked over, and Iden set his glass down, telling him,
"Just ask."
But Will just grabbed for the bottle, and Iden grabbed him, a hand at the back of Will's neck and the other squeezing his throat.
"Look at me,"
he told Will, their noses almost touching. And then Iden's gaze flashed over to me, a bitter smile playing on his lips, and a sinking feeling hit my gut. He controlled everything. Shoving Will away, he brought his hand down hard, slapping Will in the face.
"Ask,"
he said again. Will stumbled, his back to me, but after a moment he rose again, standing tall. Iden shook his head, charging up to him and slapping the same side again and again, pushing Will back until he lost his footing, spun around, and dropped to his hands and knees. Tears filled my eyes, and I stared down at Will as he took a moment to catch his breath. And then he rose back up,
facing Aiden and stealing his spine for more. What the hell was he doing? Will could fight. He wasn't even trying. What had happened to him? Aiden stepped up, nose to nose, and gazed into Will's eyes.
He's hurting, he said to him. Ask me or beat me, and you can have the whole bottle.
The bottle. I eyed the scotch whiskey. And then to Micah. Rory and Will were trying to get Aiden's liquor to soothe Micah's pain. The muscles in Will's jaw flexed, and Aiden didn't wait for his answer. Balling his fist, he reared back, swung, and slammed Will across the jaw, then grabbed his head and brought it down on his knee. I gasped as blood spurted from Will's nose, and he fell to his knees again. I started to rush toward him, but he shot out his hand, stopping me without a look in my direction. I sucked in air, eyes squeezed closed, as he wiped the blood away from his mouth and knelt there, trying to get his legs under him again. Finally, shaking, he rose to his feet. But Aiden just chuckled and walked away, pouring himself another drink.
I can't trade with someone who doesn't play, he said.
Will stood there bleeding, and I moved a little, trying to catch his eyes. But just when I thought he was going to look at me, he looked away instead and walked off the mat. What had happened to him? He wasn't the leader in high school either, but he never let anyone treat him like shit.
Sleep well?
Aiden asked. I blinked, realizing he was talking to me.
Taylor thought for sure we'd have to pry you out of that room, he mused, taking a towel and wiping the sweat off his face.
He tossed the towel on a nearby chair, his gaze falling to my hand and the knife in it.
You may as well relax, he told me. You're not leaving.
I'm not staying, he laughed, unfastening his belt.
Denial. The first phase. I remember it well, he mused, dropping his pants to the floor and leaving him in his boxer briefs. Dealing with the loss of freedom and choice are exactly like dealing with the loss of a friend or parent. This isn't happening. This isn't my life now. There has to be some way out of this.
He stared at me, amused, and then he peeled down the rest of his clothes, leaving him completely naked. Heat rose up my neck, but I clenched my jaw and kept my eyes dead center on that stupid smirk of his as the others stood around, remaining silent.
You're dirty.
He sighed, throwing back another swallow of liquor.
I warned you that we'd bathe you if you didn't do it yourself.
You're going to have to, hotshot, I fired back. I don't listen to you.
Oh, what a delight.
He smiled, turning and dropping waist deep into the pool.
I was so hoping you were going to make this hard.
I glanced at the doorway I came through, wishing I'd gone for the kitchen like I was supposed to. Are there more people in this house? I asked. He splashed water on his face, coating his chest as well.
Why would you think that?
I heard movement above me in your room a few minutes ago, I told him. Maybe if I got them distracted, searching the house, I could get to the kitchen. I might not get out of here tonight, but I could hoard some food. And again in the walls down here, I said, but you're all in here. I didn't pass anyone on my way downstairs, and it appeared they were all already down here when I arrived. You've never heard anything before? I asked. The surveillance room, probably one of many, and movement in areas of the house where there weren't supposed to be people? But he knew where I was going with my train of thought.
There's no help for you here.
He sank below the surface, submerging his body, and rose up again, swimming to the other side and then smoothing his dark hair over the top of his head as the steam billowed around his body. Unable to stop myself, I dropped my gaze. The curves and dips of his tight stomach, the bronze skin that looked like he was loved by the sun on some Mediterranean island instead of a cold, desolate house in the middle of nowhere, and the V of his hips that disappeared down into the water would make lots of women, and men, happy to look at. And I had no doubt he was well aware of it.
Come here, he said softly.
I darted my eyes to his, seeing him tread through the water to the edge closest to me, looking like a god on earth. Too bad for him, I worshipped no one. Why do you control the food? I demanded, staying right where I was.
Why would I control the food?
He challenged, and then looked behind me.
Taylor?
I looked over my shoulder, seeing Dinescu approach. I moved away.
because we're surviving, he answered for Aiden. When you can't run to the supermarket or get takeout from a restaurant, you have to make sure people don't overeat.
Or maybe controlling basic necessities helps you control the people, I retorted, shifting my gaze from Taylor to Aiden. It was a basic tactic common amongst dictators. When people spend their days fighting for food, shelter, and safety, they didn't have time or energy to fight for anything else. Keep them poor, hungry, and dumb. In any case, I said, looking him up and down, you don't seem to be underfed. Unlike Will, who gave his ration to Micah, and how often was he doing that anyway? But Aiden simply smiled.
Stay on my good side, and you won't be either.
I'd rather eat razors. He walked out of the pool. Taylor tossed him a towel, and I watched him dry off his face as he stood there naked, because he could.
You want to walk out of here with a bag of food and water, right? He guessed. Maybe a sweater?
Yes.
Tell you what, then, he said. We earn what we eat here. You can fight for it. If you win, you can leave. Or try to, he added. But if you lose, I'll show you to your own room and a private bath and some clean clothes until the restock team arrives in 29 days.
He wrapped the towel around his waist and approached me.
Or if you prefer, we can come up with another arrangement.
His eyes drifted down my body.
Women have their uses, after all.
Taylor laughed under his breath to my left, and I stared at Aiden, trying to keep my nerves in check, even though my insides were bouncing off the walls. Fight for it? Jesus. He was so nervous about how the size of his cock measured up against everyone else here that he made them fight him, or beg, for whatever it was they wanted or needed. Did he expect me to have a chance?
Ready to give up? He asked, a smile ghosting his lips.
But I stood there, thinking about my options. I could hunker down, earn his trust, hoard supplies when no one was watching, and then make my escape some night when they'd lowered their guard. That would be smart. But I also had no idea I wouldn't be put through hell in this house if I stayed, either. I couldn't risk it. All I have to do is win, I pressed. Will lurched forward before he could respond, his whole body tight and flexed.
One more step, Aiden growled over his shoulder to Will, and the choice is no longer hers. We can explore a whole slew of other arrangements to help her earn her freedom.
Will halted, breathing hard, and the first glimpse of worry in his eyes I'd seen since I got here darted between Aiden and me.
Isn't that right, Micah? Aiden prodded, and Rory.
Both boys stood off to the side, bleeding, sweaty, and defeated.
Right,
they murmured with their eyes downcast. Taylor stepped forward, throwing off the towel around his neck and circling me in his black sweatpants. I took in his wide chest, thick arms, and the ridges of his stomach, flexing as he stepped around me. I spun around slowly, following him. All I needed was one good hit. The jaw was the knockout button. If I hit his jaw, he'd go down like a dead deer. If you're lying, I said, turning my gaze to Aiden. They'll know your word means nothing. He nodded once.
You win, you walk.
And then he waved his hand, signaling us to start.
Taylor? No, me.
Will pulled up next to Aiden.
Let her fight me.
But then how can you watch? He retorted. He didn't really want Will to answer the question. He knew, love me or hate me, Will would go easy on me. And I was starting to get the feeling that Aiden wanted this to hurt Will, too. Hands slammed into my chest, and I flew back, the wind knocked out of me as I landed on my ass. Shit! Pain shot through my tailbone, and I sucked in a breath, deja vu washing over me.
Instead of winning, maybe you should worry about just staying on your feet, Taylor teased, followed with a laugh.
It sounded like Martin, though, the dark sound burrowing through my stomach like a screw. I pushed myself to my feet, feeling Will off to the side, the energy in his legs ready to move at any second, but I didn't need him. I reared back my fist, aiming straight for Taylor's jaw, but he caught it, squeezing my wrist with one hand and throwing the other across my face. Ah! I gasped, my cheek bursting into flames. Grabbing the back of my hair and making my scalp scream, he threw a fist into my stomach, and I collapsed to my knees before another hand flew across my face again. Blood filled my mouth, my eyes watered, and I could barely see. No. I clenched my teeth to keep the cry in, but then I remembered my grandmother wasn't upstairs to hear anything.
Enough!
I heard Will yell. I flexed the muscles in my thighs, forcing my legs to stop shaking. Will had never seen me get hurt. He didn't know what I could take. And Taylor Dinescu was nothing. Opening my eyes, I saw his groin right in front of me, and I shot out the palm of my hand, roaring and using every ounce of strength as I slammed my hand into his dick and then quickly rolled backward, out of his reach. He howled, falling to a knee, and I threw off my glasses and charged for him while he was down. I jumped onto his back, locking my arm around his neck and squeezing as hard as I could, paying no mind to the whispers or chuckles going off around the room. Taylor hunched over with my weight on him, but pushed himself to his feet, breathing a mile a minute and no longer at ease.
I went easy with those hits,
he gritted out. And believe me when I tell you I know how to take one, I replied. He popped up, flying backward, and I cried out, seeing the ground rush us over my shoulder. I landed on my back with his weight crashing into me on top, and I coughed and gasped for air, my ribs aching with pain.
You fucking bitch,
he muttered. He rolled over, shooting off me, and I opened my eyes in time to see his foot come in for my head. I widened my eyes and rolled away, my heart in my throat, just as the toe of his foot hit me in the eye. Fuck! I squeezed my eyes shut, and I could feel the blood dripping over my cheekbone.
God damn it, Will yelled. Enough!
Is that enough, Emery?
Iden chimed in.
You giving up?
I didn't have a chance to respond. Taylor straddled me, slapping me once and then again, and I barely had time to catch my breath before he planted his hand over my mouth and plugged my nose. I inhaled, blood coating my face, but I couldn't get any air in. My lungs constricted, my brain shut down, and all of a sudden, I was home with Martin like it was yesterday. I thrashed, flailing my hands as my body screamed for oxygen. I slapped Taylor's chest, scratched his face, and clawed his neck, kicking and squirming under his hold. His thighs tightened around me, and I twisted and twisted, trapped. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't move. Tears filled my eyes as my pulse flooded my ears. No, no, no. He leaned down next to my ear.
I could be inside you in 3 seconds, he whispered, and I will be when...
I pounded my fist, slamming it right into his jaw, and his head bobbed, his whole body going slack. He loosened his hold just enough, and I pulled his hands off my face, sucking down air as I pushed him off me. Scrambling to my feet, I spun around and backed away, seeing him sitting on the mat and holding his jaw, glaring at me. But he wasn't moving for me yet. I pivoted, staring at Iden. Open the door, I demanded. He cocked his head but didn't budge. Spotting the bottle on the table, I snatched the hem of my shirt, tearing it at the seam and ripping off a chunk as I raced for the bottle. Grabbing it, I stuffed the cloth in, backed up toward the door, and pulled out one of the matches from my pocket, dipping down to swipe the tip over the dry grout between the tiles. I faced the room full of boys as blood dripped down from my eyebrow and the corner of my mouth. I met Will's eyes, hoping he noticed the symmetry in the Molotov cocktail. He knew this trick well. Stay back, I ordered them, holding the bomb and the fuse. Iden still inched forward, drawing close.
You think I won't handle you myself if I have to?
I think you want something from me too, so, I stated. Better stay on my good side. He laughed.
Oh, phase two, he mused. Anger. I was so looking forward to this one.
Instead of being worried I could burn down this entire shelter with this one bottle, he was excited. Taylor rose from the mat, all five of them facing me and moving toward me as I drifted down the hallway. Was I really doing this? Leaving now? No food, no clothes, no help? He wasn't backing off. They weren't going to let me run. Whatever I did, I had to do it now. I lit the cloth, raised the bottle over my head, hearing the liquid slosh around inside, and they stopped, looking halfway between charging me or retreating. Fuck it. I launched the bottle, the glass crashing and flames bursting forth, consuming the hallway as they scrambled back, and I swung around, charging for the front door. They'd have to go around. There was a back door in the natatorium for them to get out, and I couldn't believe I'd done that, but that was me. Given the chance to run, I always ran. Digging in my heels, I raced for the front door and swung it open, but then suddenly, Taylor was there, pulling me to a stop right on the front stoop. I gasped, stumbling back, and he charged toward me, the rest of them shouting from outside, too. They were already rounding the house. Shit. It only took a moment to decide. Twisting around, I scurried up the stairs, remembering that I saw a balcony overlooking the waterfall somewhere on the second floor. If I could get to it, I could shimmy down a pipe and run. With Taylor on my tail and the rest of the boys barreling into the house, I raced across the landing on the second floor, someone grabbing my hair from behind and yanking me back. I whipped around, shoving Taylor away, but I lost my footing and tumbled over the railing, his fists gripping my collar and holding me as my legs flailed 15 feet off the ground. "Ah!" I cried out, grappling for his arms. I met his angry blue eyes as he just held me there. The fire extinguisher went off downstairs, putting out the fire, and the fabric of my shirt started to rip. I gasped. Taylor growled as he tried to raise me, but then he lost hold, shooting out his hands and trying to catch me again. Rory appeared, diving for me just as I fell. I slipped, descended, and Rory toppled over with me, both of us flying through the air to the floor below. I screamed, crashing to my side on the hard marble surface, and I looked up, seeing the blonde boy fall through the air right for me. He hit the ground next to me, his head whipping back, and I shot out my hands, catching his skull right before it cracked against the floor. We both breathed hard, his head cradled in my palms next to me, and he blinked, finally meeting my eyes. Then he closed them, relief falling over his face.
"Jesus Christ,"
Will said, rushing over. He took my head in his hands, inspecting me.
"Fire's out,"
Micah called. He rushed over to Rory, holding his face and gliding his hands over his torso and arms.
"Anything broken?"
he asked him. Rory shook his head, and I watched Micah's thumb rub across Rory's cheek. I moved my eyes around, trying to reconnect with my body, but I couldn't tell if I was in one piece. Everything hurt.
"Emmy, Jesus."
Will glared at me, his eyes drifting down my body. But before he could say more, Iden dove in and swept me into his arms, something between a scowl and worry playing in his eyes, too.
"Get her some food and water," he ordered someone, "and get my kit, some clean bandages and some alcohol."
He carried me up the stairs, and I watched Will and Micah sling Rory's arms around their necks and walk him, following us. Will met my eyes over Iden's shoulder, and while I couldn't tell what he was thinking, he didn't look away.
"You're a fighter," Iden said. "I like you."
"What?" I gaped at him, in too much pain to even roll my eyes.
"You saw the bones in my room today?"
Iden asked. I didn't reply.
"That was someone else who thought he could run," he explained. "We found what was left of him 3 months later, when we were out hunting."
Another prisoner tried to escape? It was definitely a human bone, a femur. I knew it the moment I picked it up. I dropped it just as quickly. I didn't know if an animal got him or the elements, and I didn't ask. And then I remembered something else he'd said. His kit. Bandages. Then there was all that stuff in his room. Biology, drawings, notes. "You're a doctor?" I said, finally realizing.
"When I want to be."
"How long have you been here?" He met my gaze.
2 years, 1 month, 15 days.
I swallowed the lump in my throat. The idea of Will being here that long hurt.
"Use your head,"
he told me, carrying me into his room as if I weighed nothing.
"You'll need it to stay alive, because this is not how we end, Emery Scott."
Despite myself, I almost smiled, but I didn't. No, this wasn't how I ended. I had 29 days.
Chapter 8. Emery. 9 years ago. I lifted one book after another, loose papers flying everywhere as I searched for my Lolita packet at the bottom of my locker. Old math papers, tattered and crinkled, blanketed the floor. And I held out book after book, fanning each one for any sign of my missing homework. Shit, that packet was over a week late. Where the hell did it go? Tears stung my eyes. I couldn't believe I was about to cry over this.
I should have just done it when it was due instead of dragging my feet. This is what I get. I knew I lost shit when that asshole Anderson knocked my books out of my hands yet again the day before yesterday. Everything scattered over the floor of the crowded hallway, passing students, kicking my crap as they went. I'd lost it. Townsend wasn't going to give me another one. Sifting through the mess, I quickly gathered up the old papers that had spilled onto the floor and stuffed them back into my locker, rising off my knees and pulling out the books on the shelf. I searched those pages as well, one last-ditch effort for hope that it was still somewhere. You okay? I glanced over my shoulder, seeing Elle walking toward me with a backpack on one arm and a trumpet case in another. Fine, I said, turning my attention back to my search. Well, everyone is about gone, she said. It's getting dark. She kept walking, but spun around to watch me as she spoke. Need a ride? She asked. No, thanks. Okay, see you tomorrow. Night, I told her, but didn't bother to look. What was I going to do? School had ended 2 hours ago. The teachers were gone, and band was gone, practice having ended over 20 minutes ago. It was too late to find my bandmate, Joseph Carville, who shared that class with me, to see if I could make a copy of his on the printer in the library. But of course, he'd probably turned his in last week anyway. I slammed my locker shut. The silence of the empty hallways only made the thoughts in my head louder. This was my fault, and I wouldn't even be able to blame Martin for getting upset when he saw the missing assignment on my records. It was almost as if I enjoyed provoking him. I was stubborn to the point of being self-destructive. I was asking for it. Diving down, I swiped my bag off the floor, but instead of heading out the doors toward home, I went back the way I came. Down the stairs, down the hallway, and toward the locker room. Come on, I heard someone suddenly say. You can do better than that. It sounded like Damon Torrance. I passed the wrestling room and peered inside, seeing him pin another kid to the mats as the basketball team worked on the weights nearby and his friends stood around, watching with amusement. I kept going. But then I heard another voice.
Why don't you pick on someone your own size?
I slowed and then stopped, tingles spreading up my arms at hearing his voice. I hesitated a moment and then retreated, hearing thuds on the mat as I peeked around the corner. Will grunted, plastered to Damon's back and pinning him to the ground as the poor kid from before stood by, smiling that the jerk was getting a dose of his own medicine. Damon jerked, freeing his arms, but Will grappled for them, quickly securing them again between their bodies and using his weight to keep them there.
I'm letting this happen, Damon gritted out. Sure you are.
Will's body shook with a laugh behind his friend, and his grin just looked so happy and easy. I started to smile too, but stopped, remembering myself. He must have sensed me, because he looked up and met my eyes. The pulse in my neck throbbed, but I didn't run. It was weird. He'd left me alone since the lock-in. Days and not a single word in lit class or a single look in the halls. I was glad for it. I didn't want his attention. Turning around, I continued on my way to the locker room and pushed through the doors, turning on the lights. I slipped into my black swimsuit bottoms and matching long-sleeved rash guard and then pulled my hair into a low ponytail. Grabbing a fresh towel off the cart, I headed to the indoor pool, leaving the lights off because the emergency track lighting was always on, and that was enough for me. I didn't want to alert anyone on the outside that I was in here when it was supposed to be empty. Setting my towel down on a bench, I kicked off my shower shoes and walked up to the edge of the pool, stretching my arms and shoulders as I hopped up and down to warm up my muscles. The chlorine in the air tickled my nostrils, and my blood coursed hot down my legs in anticipation. I'd missed this. I loved the water. Climbing up on the riser, I pulled down my goggles and bent over, gripping the end of the platform and blowing out a few quick breaths. Drawing in one large gulp of air, I pushed off, diving into the pool and fishtailing as I cut through the water. The icy cold was like a needle in every pore of my skin, but I exhaled out of my nose and then shot out one arm after the other, freestyling at a nice steady pace to the other end. I wasn't here to race, but I wanted to sweat too. Keeping my eyes down, I tilted my head to take in air every 3 strokes before putting it back in the water. Spotting the black marker on the tile below, I took 1 more stroke and flipped over, pushing off the wall and heading back the way I came. I could say band and swim were an excuse to be out of the house, that my project in the park was something else I used to avoid going home, that all these activities were things I could do relatively alone without too many others, especially peers, interfering in my role. The truth was, I liked showing people what I could do, to the town with the gazebo, to the few students and parents who had showed up to cheer us on at swim meets when I was on the team, to the whole school when I walked the football field and played the flute. Every little thing you could do made you feel stronger. I have this, so I don't need you. I have that, so I don't need you. Sometimes I was able to kid myself into believing that having this or being able to do that made me too busy and too important to possibly care about everything that I didn't have and everything I'd never be. Like a smiler, like friends, like having someone who loved to tickle me and kiss me all over my face, not just on my lips. Nah, being able to swim the 100-meter freestyle in 48 seconds was really what life was all about. That made me happy. I didn't need that other shit. Charging toward the other end, I flipped, pushed, and headed back the other direction. Deep in my rhythm now, and the worries and stress burning away like fog in the sun. I tilted my head, took a breath, and stuck my face back in the water. But just then, there was another face looking straight up at me from the bottom. I screamed, bubbles pouring out of my mouth like a goddamn geyser. What the hell? I halted and scrambled to get my head above water. But before I could get to the surface, something wrapped around my ankle and yanked me back down. I screamed louder, my submerged cries muffled as I flailed. Then I inhaled. A gulp of water lodged in my throat, and I shot out my foot, kicking the prick so hard, pain fired through my toe and straight up my leg. Gasping and sputtering, I broke through the surface, coughing as I tried to escape. But then, someone else took hold of me.
"Whoa, whoa, whoa," he said, pulling me to him and holding me with one hand around my waist and the other under my thigh. "Calm down."
I coughed, only managing short, shallow breaths as my lungs cleared, and I wiped my eyes. "Piss," I choked out, blinking and seeing Will Grayson holding me. "Off." But I was coughing too hard to sound stern, and he just snorted, laughing. I pushed away. "Get off me."
"They're just fucking around, Emmy."
He let me go, and I looked over, seeing Michael and Kai waist deep in the pool and talking to Diana Forrester, while Damon slammed his fist in the water and shot daggers at me with his eyes. Blood poured out of his left nostril as he reached onto the deck for a towel. Asshole. I could have drowned. A blonde came up behind Will, watching us before taking his hand. "I have to be home by 10, she said. "Come spend time with me." His eyes stayed fixed on me.
"You okay?"
I shot him a snarl as I walked for the edge.
"Then go home," he ordered me, turning away.
I whipped around, still trying to catch my breath. "I was here first." He looked from the girl back to me, a smile playing in his eyes.
"Suit yourself."
Leaving her, he stalked toward me again, and I backed up until I hit the edge of the pool. He stopped and fiddled with something under the water. In a moment, he leaned over and pulled the black mesh shorts he was wearing in the wrestling room out of the water and threw them over my head, onto the pool deck. I stopped breathing. Whistles and hoots echoed in the room, and I stared up into his eyes, the moment stretching to an eternity as he waited for me to do something, and I almost thought he wanted me to. Instead, I turned around and grabbed the ladder. But he took my arm and pulled me back, my body slamming into his chest. I whipped around and shoved hard against his chest, but he barely moved. Anger boiled in my gut. His hand was still wrapped around my arm, and for a moment, I almost let my eyes drop down to the water to see if he really was naked. Raising my hand, I slammed it across his face again and shoved him in the chest, pushing him away. The girl was gone. I had no idea where. "You grab me again, and I won't care about the consequences," I growled low. Turning around, I started to climb the ladder.
But then he said behind me,
"Stay."
"No." I climbed out of the pool, water dripping down my body as their patronizing whistles went off around the room.
"Why not?"
he called out. "Because you're disrespectful." I looked at him over my shoulder. "I was working out here. Your mansions all have pools. Get out and go home, why don't you?" He stared at me, and I was just about to turn away and leave, but then he yelled,
"Guys!"
His eyes stayed on me.
"Do me a favor. Get out and go home."
"Huh?" someone said.
"What?"
came another voice.
"I mean it," he told them. "Go home. Now."
I narrowed my eyes. Aw, what a gesture. Flexing his muscles to prove he had the strength of a playground bully and the moral compass of a tube sock. I rolled my eyes and walked over to the bench, picking up my towel. Water sloshed behind me, and grumbles continued, slowly fading away as the locker room doors opened and closed. When I turned around, only Will remained, staring at me from where I left him in the pool.
"Why don't you like me?"
he asked. I ignored him, wringing out my ponytail.
"And what happened to your legs?"
he questioned next. I tensed, but I didn't look down to see what he was talking about. Minor bruises dotted my legs, but my arms, torso, and back were worse. I'd made sure to cover those with the rash guard. I slipped on my flip-flops, but I heard movement in the water and looked back to see him leaning over the edge and gazing up at me.
"Why were you coming out of the cathedral last Saturday night?"
I cocked an eyebrow. Stalker. Throwing the towel over my shoulder, I took the goggles off my head and started for the locker room.
"Stay,"
he said again. And something about how he said it made my insides shake a little. Slowly, I stopped. Stay. I had no doubt I'd love everything about staying with him for an hour. If he went slow, then maybe 2 hours. I'd let him mess with my head and take me away, because every day more and more of me needed my head messed with. I needed away. But what are we going to do? I asked quietly. When he didn't answer, I turned around. "Will we play?" I inquired. "Will you make me smile?" He didn't reply. Just watched me, his chest rising and falling harder. "What do you want to happen?" I pressed. "How would it go if I stayed with you here?" I dropped my towel and goggles, and I approached him, crouching at the edge of the pool and staring down at him. "Maybe I'll joke around with your friends and we'll all laugh," I told him, imagining things that would never happen, and he knew it. "You'll touch me and whisper things in my ear. They'll take the hint and leave us alone, and I won't be able to resist you. I won't want to, right?" His eyes sharpened on me, but he listened. "You'll press me against that wall." I jerked my chin to the one near the girls' locker room door. "And I'll let you have me, because your attention feels so good." I had no doubt that part would be true. "And tomorrow, we'll walk down the hallway, hand in hand, and everyone will know we're in love, right?" He cocked his head and hooded his eyes, knowing what I was up to now. I breathed out a laugh. "Come on, Will," I said. "I have nothing you want. I'm not a happy person, ever. We don't mesh. Your life is trite to me, far removed from reality. And I thought your views on Lolita were repugnant and, worse, dangerous." His jaw flexed, his green gaze turning defiant. "I hate your friends," I continued. "I don't want to be around any of them. Except Kai, maybe. One of 3 Asian kids in a school full of wasps. He, at least, has some clue what it's like to be me. Pretty sure the only other Jewish kid graduated last year." "And you have nothing I want," I went on. "You coast through everything. So where does your character come from? I don't want to have fun with you, because there's nothing and no one you don't use. I don't respect you." He tipped his chin down, looking angry now as he glared. "In 20 years, you'll all be your fathers. Powerful, wealthy, and with a string of mistresses, your wives will be drugging themselves in order to forget that you have." I stood up, looking down on him. "But even as masters of the universe, Will Grayson III, we'll never forget that I was one notch on his belt that he could never get. I'm not going to let you win this one. At least I'll have that." I started to walk away, but before I knew what was happening, he jumped up, grabbed my arm, and yanked me down into the pool. I screamed and splashed, but he didn't let me go under, pulling me into his body and wrapping his arms around me instead. I looked up at him, breathing hard, and he looked down at me, our lips inches from each other. Drops of water glistened in his hair and wet his eyelashes, and for a moment, I had no will. I lowered my eyes to his mouth, supple and strong, and most amazing when he used it to smile. Tears pooled in my eyes. I couldn't stop him. Don't, please. I wasn't a happy person, not ever. I won't be able to stop you. He pulled me in, and I opened my mouth to protest, but instead of a kiss, he just pulled me into his arms, pressed my head to his shoulder, and wrapped his arms around me so tight, it felt like he was the one about to break, not me. I stilled, not sure what to do, but I could feel every muscle in his body flex as he held me and took deep breaths. And slowly, I closed my eyes, every ounce of fight draining out of me, feeling his embrace. It had been so long since I felt this. My grandmother was hardly lucid enough to hug me much anymore. My arms itched, wanting to touch him. God, I wanted to hold him. But before I could work up the courage to pull away or hug him back, he whispered, "I'm not like that." And he pulled up, staring down at me almost nose to nose. "And I'll see you on the bus tomorrow night, Emery Scott." He released me and swam for the edge, leaving me cold in the pool. "What?" The air chilled, and I watched as he pulled himself up the ladder, and I spun around just in time, giving him my back as his naked body exited the pool. Shit. Unable to help myself, I surrendered to the pull and glanced over my shoulder. But it was too late. He was fastening a towel around his waist, the cords and muscles in his back intimidating, and everything about him was perfect. Without sparing me another glance, he opened the men's locker room door and disappeared inside. Ugh, what was he doing? Why wouldn't he just stop? I swam for the edge of the pool, picking up my shit without bothering to dry off, and stormed into the girls'